Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 239. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches, lobster, and oyster shucking as we go to Prince Edward Island in Canada. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. The first one is passport fees for Americans are going up next week. So if you have not gotten your passport or you have not renewed your passport, you might think about doing it quickly and save some money. The second one, I had predicted last year that Congress was going to lift the ban on travel to Cuba. I think I was correct, but I was premature. But this week, we had some actual movement towards that as one of the subcommittees in Congress that is responsible for that voted to repeal the travel ban to Cuba. So I renew my prediction, but I'm going to say that it will happen by the end of this year. For links to both of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is brought to you by Audible.com. Just go to amateurtraveler.com/freebook to get a two-week trial for Audible as well as a free book. I'm planning on listening to my latest Audible books as I drive around the North Island of New Zealand starting tomorrow. And that would be the second announcement. If you're in New Zealand and you'd like to get together while I'm there, just drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Pamela Beck from the Department of Tourism of Prince Edward Island. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Prince Edward Island, I know it's in Canada, and I know that Anne of Green Gables lived there, or at least lived there in literature. Why should someone vacation in Prince Edward Island, and who should go to Prince Edward Island? What kind of people would really enjoy it?
I think we're most popular with people who are looking to get away from it all and to have a completely relaxing and a place where your breathing completely changes when you arrive. If that's what you're looking for, then Prince Edward Island is the place for you. And that's not to say that we don't have lots of excitement as well, but there is something magical that happens when you cross the water and arrive on PEI. There's just a whole different feeling of relaxation that sets in.
And you say cross the water. What is the way that most people get to Prince Edward Island? Do they fly in? Do they take the ferry?
They take many different methods. We do have a ferry that comes from Nova Scotia on the mainland. There's also a bridge, which is the longest bridge over ice-covered waters, not that the waters are ice-covered this time of year, that comes from New Brunswick. Many people fly in. You could take a train to New Brunswick and then rent a car and drive across as well. Or we get boaters as well who come and choose to arrive at our marinas.
And since you bring up the ice-covered waters, let's talk about when you should go to Prince Edward Island. When is your tourism season, and when would you recommend? If you really want to see Prince Edward Island at its best, you really ought to come when?
Well, certainly this time of year is beautiful, but Prince Edward Island is beautiful all year round, and we have sparkling winters here. But the spring, the summer, and the autumn are the peak times for when travelers choose to visit us, but that's not to say that you can't come in the midst of winter as well.
And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for people to come to Prince Edward Island?
We're surrounded on absolutely all sides by spectacular beaches, so definitely some beach time is in order. We're considered the premier golf destination in the country. We have over 30 courses on this tiny island, so it's an incredible place to golf, and there's golf here for all different levels of golfers. We're leaders in experiential products as well, because we discovered that many of our visitors have a fascination with what real islanders do for a living or what they do for fun. So we've set up with many, say, fishers or farmers that visitors can actually go out with them and see what it is they do and try their hand at it themselves, or with artists, with musicians. So it's a really exciting thing to be able to experience real island life.
Can you give me some examples? If I'm going to stop my job and go up there and do someone else's job for a while, what sort of things would you do? What sort of fishermen?
Sure. You can get to do some really glamorous things, like oyster tonguing, using huge rakes to actually bring up oysters from the sand on the bottom of a bay. You can go lobster fishing, and you can actually do a real deal lobster fishing where you go out and haul all the traps with a real lobster fisherman. It includes getting up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, however, I must warn you, and starting work at 4, and then working for many, many hours hauling in hundreds of traps. You could go work with an artist for the day and create works of art and pewter metalworks. You could go and work with a chocolatier and make chocolate, make handmade chocolates at a little chocolate factory. There are more than 70 different experiences that you can try out on the island. So that's something that's a must-do if you come to PEI, is just to try out something and you get to get your hands dirty and really get involved.
Okay. And for somebody who is possibly less interested in doing the work and as bad a golfer as I am, what is some of the sightseeing that is available on Prince Edward Island?
We're told quite often that absolutely everywhere that you drive just looks like a postcard, and it's very true. In fact, I live here and have lived here most of my life, born and bred here, and I still will sometimes just drive around a corner or reach the crest of a hill, and the view absolutely takes my breath away. It's a very beautiful place. It's an incredibly green place. The colors are just spectacular. The blues are blue, and our soil is very red because it's rich in iron oxide, which makes it really rich for agriculture, which is one of our primary industries here. The sightseeing is spectacular. You can't go wrong. No matter what road you turn down, you're going to be rewarded at the other end. It's just very beautiful. The food, which I haven't mentioned, is absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the things that we're probably best known for. And there's a level of sophistication in the dining here that's surprising. It's very, very casual, and you find incredible restaurants out in the country because we're a very rural place. Those things in combination, just wandering around or going by bicycle on our trails, going kayaking, just getting out and enjoying the scenic beauty that we have, is a really important thing to do.
Okay. So you talked about it being pretty. What is your favorite spot?
Oh, very good question. I have a lot of them. Probably my very favorite spot would be the Greenwich Dunes, which is a parabolic dune system in the Prince Edward Island National Park in eastern PEI. And there are spectacular trails there that you can hike or just take a leisurely walk. They're not that taxing that it can't be done by anyone. But the reward at the end of those trails is absolutely spectacular, and the beaches there are phenomenal. One of the things that you'll find when you visit any beach on PEI is that you can choose to be on the beach with a crowd of people if you like that social type of beach. But then if that's not your style, you can just wander down the shore a little bit, take a book with you, and have a stretch of beach all to yourself. That's typical even in our national parks where the beaches can be busier. You just take a little walk and you can have a part of the beach that's all yours.
What are the one of the last few things that you did when a friend came to visit that they were surprised about?
Definitely the dining would be our biggest surprise. That you can drive out into the country. I'm thinking in particular of there's a little restaurant that's an old roadhouse that's called Ship to Shore in a place called Darnley. Tiny little community, and it's a restaurant that is recommended in Where to Eat in Canada. It was named one of the best 10 new restaurants in the country for last year.
Interesting.
But it's in a little tiny, tiny place. There's a Canadian champion oyster shucker who owns it and runs it and is there shucking oysters for you. So I think that you'll find incredible culinary surprises in really little out-of-the-way spots. So even if you're traveling by bicycle, it's not necessary to come back into town necessarily, although there's wonderful dining in our towns as well. But you could find it in little tiny places. Another place called the Inn at Bay Fortune that's in the eastern end of the island. Just an incredible, spectacular chef there, but it's way out in the country. There's so many places like that where there are just dining surprises, I think.
And I forgot to look up when you talk about way out in the country, how wide is Prince Edward Island from end to end?
From end to end, it's about 180 miles, okay. But from up and down, it ranges between 4 and 40 miles wide. So it's not really large. The driving distances are very manageable. And as I mentioned, even traveling by bicycle is quite possible here. We have something unique in that when the trains stopped running in Prince Edward Island in 1989, there were people here who had the foresight to create something called the Confederation Trail. So there is a trail that runs through everywhere where there used to be a rail line. And you can actually bicycle from tip to tip on a trail that's all groomed trail, very safe for hiking or bicycling. And there are more than 400 kilometers of trail all over PEI.
We have that at several places in the U.S. as well. And one thing I've always appreciated about that is the trains didn't like to do great big hills, and neither do I when I'm on a bike. So,
then this would be a great cycling spot for you because our highest point is only 500 feet above sea level. So it's very gently rolling, the landscape, that we have no mountains. In fact, we really have no real rock to speak of, just sandstone, which is very, very porous. So it's a very gently rolling landscape, and it's ideal for cycling.
And with the island being 180 miles long, do you recommend an itinerary where stay a few days over here if I was coming for a week, for instance, or do you day trip the whole thing from a central location? What do you recommend to people?
It really depends on the type of traveler because either works. If you like that, you know, a new place every night, then that's very possible to do because there are accommodations that stretch literally from tip to tip. There are beautiful country inns, there are hotels, there are cottages, and there are campgrounds all over PEI scattered throughout. So that's an option if that's the way that you choose to travel because our driving distances are so short. You can also stay centrally located and then just day trip from there. So it's really accessible either way just because of the compact nature of the island itself.
Okay. And you mentioned country inns and campgrounds. I know this is hard when you work for the tourism board to have you pick a favorite, but one of your favorite inns and one of your favorite campgrounds.
Oh, goodness. With favorite inns, I would say one of my favorites would be Dalve by the Sea Hotel, which was a summer home built by a gentleman who was a former president of Standard Oil. And believe me, this is no cottage. It's a spectacular property, and it's located just on the edge of the Prince Edward Island National Park. And it's just an absolutely beautiful house. I think what I love most about it is there's a gorgeous fireplace just inside the lobby, and the scale of it is very grand, and there's amazing dining there. They can pack a gourmet picnic basket for you to go out cycling. You can rent a bike by a beautiful little sparkling lake and right on the ocean as well. So it's kind of got everything, but it's one that comes to mind immediately as a favorite. In terms of camping, goodness, so many different locations. There are some spectacular provincial parks and the national park camping. When you can be in a tent and literally just next to the ocean, that's absolutely unbelievable.
I'd like you to think about one day you woke up on Prince Edward Island and said, "Thank God I live here." What did you do? What about that day made it special to you?
That's pretty much every day. Literally, I have one of those moments every day. And I know it sounds like that couldn't possibly be true, but it really is because it's an incredible place to live. I would say the thing that is most incredible, that, I mean, the landscape is spectacular here, the food is spectacular here, but it's the people here. It's the days when I wake up and I hear that there's some kind of fundraiser happening for someone who's in need, and islanders are just incredibly generous and incredibly giving. And I think it's the people here that are probably the very best story of PEI is just the generosity. And if you're a traveler on Prince Edward Island and someone even spots you with your map out, you will be accosted by someone so quickly and they'll be on you to help so fast, even if you just happen to be reviewing your itinerary for the day. Islanders are really helpful and give really interesting directions. Just that's of note too. Islanders don't give directions. No one knows what route number they live on. They'll just tell you, oh yeah, drive this many miles past the red house that may not be red anymore, but it has been red sometime in the past. And they give very landmark-oriented directions, which can be quite comical for visitors at times.
I'm not going to give up my other questions so easily. The last time you planned a special day off, what did you do?
I went sailing my last very special day off and went to the beach. And I go out to dinner a lot because we have so many amazing restaurants.
Okay, you went sailing where, and is that something that a tourist can do?
It is something a tourist can do. In fact, one of our experiences involves even going out and learning to sail. I went out sailing in what's known as the Three Rivers area, the Montague, Brudenell, and Cardigan Rivers, and the Georgetown Harbor. And there are some phenomenal experiences that you can take out of Georgetown as well with a guy named Perry Gotell, who has an experiential company called Tranquility Cove Adventures. And he's a guy you can go out lobster fishing with. You can go out doing a giant bar clam dig, and he'll take you out to a place called Botten Island, a little island that's out off the coast of Prince Edward Island, and you can actually go diving for giant bar clams, and you'll cook them in a big pot and eat them. That area, to be out on the water there, is amazing. There are seal-watching cruises with a company called Cruise Manada out of that area as well.
Okay, and then you mentioned going to the beach. Your favorite beach?
My favorite beach is probably Basin Head Beach, which is in eastern Prince Edward Island. I have a couple of favorite beaches. Pamir Island Beach is another favorite, and Greenwich.
And why are they your favorites?
Probably, I think you will find with islanders that everybody has their favorite, and it's based on some form of nostalgia. If you were to ask anybody on PEI, they'll have a favorite, and it's because of happy memories of growing up and going to the beach there, usually with islanders. And that's why the ones that I mention are in fairly close proximity to the area of the island where I grew up.
Okay. And then you talked about locals. Can you think of a person who most represents PEI for you? One particular local character?
Probably there is a local historian by the name of David Wheel, who's just an amazing storyteller. And he's probably one of my favorite locals, just because of the great stories he tells and his perspective on things, and he collects the stories of many others as well. I've also got some favorite locals in the oyster-growing and oyster-shucking world, too, just because that's such a unique, fun, such a direct connection from the sea to the table, where there's nothing done to that piece of food. It's just a really fun thing. So I think oyster shucker John Bill comes to mind as well as being one of our great island characters.
Okay. I have a friend who's actually heading to PEI, I think in September, for a festival, and I don't offhand even remember which festival it is, but what is your favorite local festival?
The one your friend may be coming for, and the one that's one of my favorite local festivals, is Fall Flavors, which happens for almost the entire month of September. This year it's from September 3rd until the 30th. And it is literally an island-wide festival. It's happening from tip to tip on the island. Every community gets involved. And it's all about the celebration of what makes us so special, the incredible food that we have. I think Prince Edward Island is really unique in Canada. We're the smallest province in Canada, and we're very unique in that all of our primary industries are directly related to food, tourism and agriculture and the fishery. That's what most of our jobs come from. There's a very immediate direct connection to the food world here. So I think that's probably one of our biggest and best festivals, just because it's such a huge celebration and everyone gets involved. And for people who come to visit that festival, they can actually participate in very hands-on ways, because experiences are part of that. There's feasting, there are big things, there are small things, there are cultural aspects to it, there'd be great music and dining. So it's a month full of fun.
Okay. You talked about how people don't know this about Prince Edward Island, that most of the things are related to food. Working with the tourism board, what frustrates you that people you wish that people just knew this one thing about Prince Edward Island that they don't know?
Probably how easy it really is to get here. It may seem inaccessible because we're an island, but it's really incredibly easy to get here from anywhere in North America or from Europe. We're very accessible because of our bridge, because of the flights. There's an airport right in Charlottetown. There's not a lot involved in getting to us, but there is a huge reward when you get here.
And the tour books that I would read about Prince Edward Island, what do they leave out? What do they miss?
I think the thing that they leave out is something that's very intangible, and that's that when you get here, your breathing is literally going to change. There's just a completely different pace and way of life, and even if you start out feeling frantic and feeling stressed and a little harassed by life, that's just going to disappear because it's the kind of place where it's almost impossible to be stressed out because it's laid back. The people are laid back, easygoing. You can't really even drive in a hurry. You're going to get stuck behind perhaps a piece of farm equipment on the road that's very large and can't even be identified as to what it might possibly do. So you have, sometimes you just have no choice but to just slow down and enjoy the view.
And as we go to wrap this up, finish this sentence for me. You really know you're on Prince Edward Island when what?
When you have an incredible plate of lobster and oysters and mussels in front of you, and you're wearing your shorts or your jeans, and there's an incredible chef who has prepared a meal for you, and you can look out the window and see the very garden or fields where the produce on your plate has been grown.
Okay. And if I asked you to summarize Prince Edward Island in just three words, what three words would you use?
Beautiful. Okay. Relaxing. Fun.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about Prince Edward Island. If people were interested in contacting you or the tourism department, how could they do that?
They could do that by going online on www.gentleisland.com.
Pamela, thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler.
Thanks so much, Chris.
In news from the community, Melanie, who was our guest from Traveling with Two, about talking about the Cook Islands last week, had the problem that most guests have, which is after we hang up, they realize the things they didn't say. So Melanie left a comment on the post that said, "What bears mentioning about the Cook Islands that I did not weather. We visited in August when the temperatures hover between 60 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Skies were overcast for some part of every day, and sometimes windy conditions made for choppy sailing and snorkeling. A day could start with a very cool morning, halfway through be bathed in brilliant sun, and still feature one or two short spritzes of rain. Locals told us that the warmest, clearest weather, not often above 85 degrees Fahrenheit, is found in late February to early April." Rob, who had also been to New Zealand, shared this. "Pa is still sprucking the walk across, it seems. Cook Island is paradise, and worthy by the location. It is isolated, 4,000 kilometers northish from Auckland makes it close to nowhere. It is stunning, and I would recommend, although if you have been to Tahiti, in my opinion, it is not even remotely similar. English is everywhere, the currency is New Zealand dollar, the food is great, and the coral is not dead. And for anyone that has seen the photos of aircraft landing at St. Martin, it happens here too." And then another comment on the Cook Island episode was by Tehormir, who said, "Thanks for the great podcast. The Cook Islands is definitely one of my favorite places in the world. I get there by chance in 2008 when I was booking a flight from LAX to Auckland, and the travel agent mentioned I could make a stopover on Rarotonga if I fly on a Sunday. I did a similar trip, both Rarotonga and Aitutaki, but was definitely on a low budget. On Rarotonga, I stayed in one of the two hostels. It wasn't that smelly, but it was definitely a party place. I heard the other hostel was much calmer, although not right on the beach. On Aitutaki, I stayed with a local family. I had the time of my life, and it cost next to nothing. You shouldn't miss out on going to church service on Sunday and renting a kayak for a stroll down the small islands, Motu. Bring a lot of sunscreen. Another thing which Melanie mentioned is that if you decide to go to Aitutaki and you have enough time, you should buy a Cook Island Air Pass on Air Rarotonga, which includes Rarotonga, Aitutaki, Aitui, Rarotonga. It costs just a bit more than a return flight between Rarotonga and Aitutaki, but you get to see one more island. I wish I had paid attention to that before I booked." other news of the community, since I am heading to New Zealand and don't know what kind of internet connection I will have, there is a possibility that there won't be a show next week. We'll just have to see how that works out. I am planning on doing one, but if I don't get an internet connection to upload it, that may not happen. It is not too late as I record this to reserve a place on the Egypt photo tour in November. I don't know for sure whether it will be by the time that you hear this, but if you are interested, again, act quickly if you want to join Ralph Velasco and I on that photo tour in Egypt, and go to amateurtraveler.com/tours for more information. With that, and because I still have to pack for New Zealand, I think I'm going to wrap this show up. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, or follow me on Twitter at either Chris2X for the chatty version of me, or Amateur Traveler. And again, thanks so much for listening.